You're listening to the Young Opportunist Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. In this week's episode, we had the privilege of talking to Tom and Luke, two of the Barbell founders.
Barbell Foods was founded by four best mates in their early 20s from a shared passion for health, movement, and the outdoors. This was a perfect opportunity to create a healthy source of protein to fuel their adventures. And this is where Biltong was born.
Reese and I really enjoyed connecting with these boys, and we honestly took so much away from this conversation. To add to that, we were lucky enough to be invited out to their factory for the interview.
Everyone knows every business has to start somewhere, and their start involved some hard yakka man labor. This process involved marinating kilos of steak in a small rented kitchen, drying in the pantry, and finally cutting each steak by hand. I'm pretty sure they said they had 12-hour days of cutting dry steak.
That's a lot of steak. It was crazy to hear their humbling beginnings and to see where they're at today, with a huge factory and automated machinery. These boys have built and scaled an incredible business and have come a long way from where they started. Reese, what are we covering this episode?
Advice for young founders with big dreams and empty pockets. How you can best transition from your 9-to-5 corporate job into entrepreneurship. Advice on how to take action on that business idea you've always had in the back of your mind. Why having audacity when you're just starting out is so important. And why raising capital might be the very thing you need to get your company to the next level. We hope you guys enjoy this episode because we really enjoyed the conversation and also the whole process from start to finish, structuring the questions into how we wanted this episode to run, and finally meeting with the boys in their factory. Let's get underway with today's episode. Welcome back to another episode, guys. We are really excited to be here for one of our first in-person interviews, Barbell Foods. We had a session this morning at your Crazy Granimals session. It was unreal. I think we got abused a bit with the sand, and I was still pulling out sand out of my scalp this morning. But
wait, until you check your underwear, mate.
It was awesome. So I started following you guys on Instagram, as I said earlier, for a while now, and it's been awesome to see how much you guys have grown, getting into big supermarkets and all the chains, and it's unreal. So awesome to have you here, and thanks for joining us today.
Cool, my pleasure, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And for a bit of an introduction, we have Luke and Tom. Let's get underway. So what can you tell us about your early life? Think about when you were a child. What do you believe has shaped you to become who you are today?
Yep. We've probably got two very different experiences.
Yeah. I think you start off. You have a pretty interesting sort of...
I grew up in South Africa, where Biltong's from. I spent half my life there and half here. My parents were business owners their whole life. My dad was a manufacturer, like a soap manufacturer. And I have a specific memory as a kid of him working the whole night once, like working a 24/7 or 24-hour day. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm never going to do business in my life. And I've got a fucking business. So. If anything, I realized your parents probably have a bigger impact on you. At least more than I initially had realized.
Yeah.
I've come from a background of my family. My family is probably very risk-taking. And sometimes those risks haven't always paid off for them.
Mm.
And sometimes factors totally out of their control. Like South Africa went through a lot of political and economic upheaval. And we went through periods of actually being quite poor in a way. I mean, it's always relative, right? Mm. not starving for a meal or anything, but very working class. I think my childhood, I was put off by business, just seeing the risk and the work involved.
Mm.
But at the same time, as I've kind of grown up, I've kind of realized that we're all going to end up in the same place, 6 feet under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well have a crack and go for it because you got nothing to lose.
Yeah. And I guess for me, I've had a pretty sort of normal upbringing. Didn't really go without a whole lot. I guess like a few things that I probably have drawn upon from my parents over time has just been my dad's very competitive sort of person. So like really... my whole upbringing, my whole identity was very much embedded in like sport and like competing and that's how I sort of got my respect from my peers or what have you and I guess my mum was probably actually more they both worked, but mum was more the breadwinner, which is a bit different compared to most families at that time, at least. So I saw her sort of really making sure, like, putting family first, but also, you know, grinding quite a lot as well and working hard. And she wouldn't consider herself particularly gifted or, like, intellectually, like, you know, I guess I got a sense of where a bit of hard work can get you to.
That's interesting to note. I'll just jump in here. Yeah. You're definitely the workhorse of our business, Tom.
It's your
superpower.
And I guess, like, I was, so because you guys mentioned a few of the questions before we were coming in, and reflecting on a few, like, sort of pivotal moments or, like, things where that have kind of shaped me to some extent. And two things sort of came to mind. One was I was struggling probably in my teens academically with some mathematics, and it used to be sort of my wheelhouse. I sort of fell off the bandwagon there. And, yeah, I remember my parents, like, sort of caught on to that early, and they got me a tutor. And I went to the tutor, kind of she started from scratch again. So we went back to sort of the basics, the fundamentals of, you know, what don't you understand yet? And let's get that, and then we can try work on these harder problems that you just have no clue about. I think from, like, a deeper sort of level when it came to, like, learning in general, from that point forward, I won't move on with a certain, like, discipline or topic without understanding the basics first. So I think that's really carried over a bit to how we've done the business as well. And not sort of rote learning things, but really understanding, like reason your way to certain solutions and stuff. And the other thing, which I'll just touch on really quickly, sort of relates to the sporty sort of identity that I had of myself. Had a few knee reconstructions sort of early on in my 18 and 20. That kind of made me I lost that sort of identity as a sporty guy, and I had to sort of move on with or find other areas of interest. And I'm really grateful that adversity I went under, and it really just made me look into how my mind works and what other things actually get me going and motivated and getting up in the morning. So
that's awesome, and especially, like, so diverse between the both of you. And I understand that last point that you said about that identity piece, because, like, playing footy myself, that's what a lot of people go through, like big knee reconstruction or shoulder, and putting them out of the sport. And you see it in even the top athletes in the world, like, especially just that being their, like, pure identity, and when they retire, footy players, like, just go on a shambles from then on. So that's awesome you guys can pull that from your childhood and identify that shape to you.
And I think there's a similarity between both your upbringings, which is, like, I think, like, hard work's, like, kind of distilled in that, like, you've seen firstly your parents, like, I guess, struggle, but also keep, I guess, it builds a lot of resilience, like, seeing that as well. And it's funny that you thought, like, that's the last thing that I want to do. But I think it's probably, honestly, like, in your DNA that you probably got to 9 to 5, or that was something that you never truly wanted to do, and there was something kind of probably more internal that was like,
I mean, there's definitely probably a genetic component to just risk acceptance and maybe there is.
100%. That's interesting. So James Smith, the PT, I don't know if you know who this guy is. He's from England. He's a big, like, personality on Instagram. But listened to a podcast the other day, and he talks about having the audacity to start. And I guess that's anything with any startup. You've got to have that, I guess, belief that you can actually succeed in something. And it takes a bit of audacity to say, I'm going to play with the big dogs. Like, and you have to almost have the imagination that I'm going to make this happen. For you guys, you identified a problem, thought of an idea, and actually went after it. What drove you guys to take the leap? And I guess, what is your deep level inner why for doing it?
Again, these answers will probably be different.
They're going to be different,
I guess there's probably many different, like, whys, or, like, different people have different answers there. For me, I guess taking the leap, before starting a business, I didn't really understand what business was. Like, I had, you know, went to study the same degrees as you guys. Had an idea of business, but I think at its fundamental, business is just problem solving. Like, yesterday we did some social media shooting. We had to be quite creative, and we're, like, making funny skits. Business that day was that. Today, business is doing a podcast with you boys and writing some emails or speaking to some buyers this morning. Those are just problems, and the problems vary. You know, someone's business is how to get a person to Mars, you know, Musk or something. And but it's just problem solving at its core. How I got into it, though, I would have been too scared to start a business if that's what I realized I was doing. Rory, my younger brother, he's kind of the wild man of the business, and he had the idea to just start making biltong and just selling it on the side to our friends and family, and Tom was one of our biggest customers.
That's why he's so shredded.
Yeah. for me, I just saw it as an experiment. We're just going to start making biltong, see where it goes. That made it less daunting. Mm-hmm. It feels like, hey, we want to grow this business and do this many million revenue and hire a team and do this. I wouldn't have started. It would have been too scary. So I'd recommend just view it as an experiment and just start.
Yeah.
Don't overthink it, really.
It's funny that you say that because Ben and I have talked about this as well, and being like oblivious of what's actually going to happen. And that's what like a lot of people that we've heard on podcasts and they talk about this idea of when you're young, like it's almost better not to know anything because you actually don't know what's in store for you. Like as you said before, you wouldn't have done it. Like if you really knew, what's your opinion on that, Tom?
Well, it's a little bit different story for me because Rory and Luke really – They started making it before I joined. And I was sort of one that had a few sort of entrepreneurial ideas and stuff like that, but really had no idea like how to get any of that off the ground. And I'd just become really great mates with Luke and Rory, hanging out with them quite a lot.
You're
just sort of saying,
built on custom.
Little did I know that they were just manipulating it.
Just trying to make a sale.
Then again, they were selling the biltong for like under cost. So.
Yeah. We needed our CFO, that's why.
Yeah.
I got into the business out of fear more than anything. So I was a bit fearful of, I was finishing up uni. Pretty fearful of going into the corporate world, not because, you know, I think it's like a mundane existence or anything. It was more to do with I didn't feel competent. I didn't know my place in the world, really. And I was a bit scared, I guess, of having to learn at a pace that wasn't the pace I could learn at. And, I guess the business sort of, when Luke and Rory asked me to join, I looked at them as someone as very competent people, very resourceful people, people that believed in themselves, and they also believed in me. Like I felt that as well, and I guess that's why I initially just jumped into it. I was like, I'm gonna whether this completely fails or not, I'm gonna learn so much about myself and probably get a lot of confidence from it, and even if it ends. Sooner than I wanted it to, I'll be able to move on and sort of apply those skills elsewhere. So that's sort of that was my deeper why as to why I even got into the business. I wasn't passionate about dried meat or the meat industry and stuff like that. I did like the product, but it was more like, how am I going to grow?
And you would have learned so much. Like you probably would have
way more
had to learn a lot faster pace than if you were to get a job. Looking back on it,
ironically,
now, in the corporate world,
perhaps, you learn at your own pace in business. So, you kind of you only get out what you put in it. But there's definitely times where it's been beneficial to really learn at a slow pace. And then there's some things you pick up quickly, and maybe you would have had to do some course or something with in the corporate world that just you don't need to do. So I think pros and cons to both ways. Yeah.
What's the one thing you guys attribute to the success of Barbell Foods? If you could put it to one or maybe a few. Obviously, like you guys, Tommy, you're talking about you're pretty hardworking and in that aspect.
If I could put it down to one thing, I would say it was just the commitment of the founding team, which is the four of us. So there's many, many skills and things that we'll bring to the business, but if the four of us didn't support each other during those hard times. So hard to start a business and get off the ground. If I wouldn't have been able to do this by myself is what I'm saying. So having the team and the commitment of the other guys, we all supported each other. For me, that was the one thing that got us through those hard moments.
And I'd probably just add to that. I definitely think yeah, I've always felt like the full commitment of everyone. But I think one trait that we probably have sort of encouraged in each other, and we're even trying to encourage in the employees we're bringing on now, is that you're never going to not feel out of your depth in business. Like the more you grow, like it's just like a new like problem that you haven't faced before. And it's sort of, I guess, just first of all, just acknowledging that that's like always going to be the case, and just sort of pushing through that angst that you might have about, you know, the next scary thing you do, whether that's like interviewing a new employee or pitching to a retailer or pitching to people at markets and things like that. Like it's, you only really learn how to do those things
stay
well.
In your comfort zone.
By doing them, and that you can't read a manual on like how to pitch. Like it's just, you just have to get in there and know that like you're going to be clunky. Like you guys probably have experienced yourselves as podcasts. It's like you look back at your first few interviews and you know, look how far you've come now. And I think that's one thing that we've probably got each other to sort of just accept that and like, embrace the angst, I guess, of that.
Yeah, that's massive. And something that me and Reese talk about a lot is like being comfortable with the uncomfortable, because that's often like where you do grow the most. And you kind of have to, I guess, if you want to be successful, lean towards that, which is something that's so unnatural. It's super unnatural. But I guess that's probably the difference between those companies or even those people that are successful compared to others.
I think so, yeah. You're going to be perpetually confused. The people that can handle that probably are the ones that succeed.
Yeah, for sure. You guys have obviously had to transition from being best mates to founders and partners of the business. I know personally, Reese and I, we were best mates like since before college.
What's business partners?
Hey, let's cut it back. We're strictly business now. So we've been best mates since before college. And it's been really interesting having to transition to now also being like partners in a business and a brand and a platform as well. We've had to have some difficult conversations talking about expectations and also like even just in general communication as well, just making sure that it's top notch, because I know that Reese comes in like down to the studio and I'm like off, he can tell straight away and we've got to have that conversation and then in order for us to kind of move forward. And it's been really interesting having to balance that.
Yeah, and especially in like a social sense, like you guys probably relate to this, like being around other mates, it's not the time to talk about the podcast or the Barbell Foods. Like it's not the time to talk about the business. It's time to hang out with your mates and have a good time.
How have you guys found this?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely disagree with don't work with your friends and family. You know, Rory is my brother and Tom's my best mate. And I wouldn't want to be doing this business with people I didn't enjoy being around. But there is some unique, I guess, difficulties, as you guys have found.
Yeah.
I think you really just have to have an extremely open and honest relationship and be willing to have like hard conversations. I've typically tried to be direct, but like sometimes that's also not great. You know, if someone messes up something, it's wrong to be like, hey, you fucked up here.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to be taken on board well. But at the same time, if someone has made a mistake, that shouldn't be not addressed, because that same mistake will happen again. So, just being open to giving and taking feedback, it's extremely hard to do. It's a practice, I'd say. Like, it doesn't necessarily get easier, but you just have to keep doing it.
Yeah, I think it probably took me some years to sort of get used to the Rathbone directness. But it is...
What do you mean?
You guys just wrestle it out, eh?
But I think there's a few things that I try to keep it front of mind, I guess, whenever, I have to have difficult conversations with guys in the business. One's just sort of that outcome over ego sort of mentality where, early days, I would take criticism or, people like flagging my mistakes as a power game, which is just like the wrong way to think about it. And, it would hurt.
It's almost like an ego thing, right?
My ego, definitely. And as we've got to know each other better and how we work and just like our little idiosyncrasies, we've started to realize that whenever we're giving feedback, we know it's coming from a place of love. We just want, everybody.
Best for each other and the business.
Best for each other in terms of their work and their life outside of the business. So, I think we don't let things fester anymore. And I don't think we ever really did to an extent. So I think that's why it's survived. And
yeah, I think so.
We don't hate each other.
It was definitely harder earlier days just because we were all under more stress. But yeah, on that point where you know it's coming from a good place, that's easier to know when you're working with your mates or your family.
Yeah, 100%.
You're working with some boss you don't like and they're criticizing or giving you constructive feedback. It's going to be harder to be like, this guy just loves me and wants the best for me. And
100%.
I'd say it's a good thing to work with your friends and family.
Yeah.
But you got to foster a certain culture.
Yeah, that's mad.
I think something that we've probably of late got better at is just finding time outside of the business to just socialize with each other.
Yeah.
And like, kind of like, yeah, leave that business talk for another time and place and just hang out. Yeah.
Because, you spend so much time with each other in the business, but you don't want that to be your sole time.
Yeah.
Exactly. Your friends.
Totally. So on that, what advice would you give to our audience that has been in your shoes, so a group of mates, you know, talking about the next big business idea, probably after a couple of years? How do you actually get everyone on board to pursue a company as a group of mates? Or even in general, I guess, taking the leap?
Yeah, to me, kind of echoing previously where I just saw it as an experiment. And it kind of like you did it in a way, sharing your answer about like if it fails, it fails, and I would have learned something. Yeah. So kind of maybe just not overthinking the end goal.
Yeah.
Because like if this thing just fails, dude, you guys are going to walk away with amazing skills of conversation and that could help in just many business and non-business settings. So if you just go into it as like you've almost got nothing to lose, which you really don't unless you like walk out with tons of debt.
Yeah.
It's your time, but you're going to learn a heap of skills. You know, you could pay – we both went to uni and you pay a lot of fees to learn those skills. Business, worst case scenario for most people would be you walk away with nothing, you learn a heap of skills. Best case scenario, you learn a heap of skills and you walk away with a bit of financial freedom.
So true.
Yeah, just see it as an experiment and don't overthink it.
I guess maybe you're not ready as well. Like that's something to consider. So I just say to your sort of younger mates who you know actually, Riley Basser. And,
shout out to Bass.
Yeah, Big Bad Bass. And one of our recent employees, Ash, they've sort of been chatting about, you know, some sort of venture for the last 6 months. And I sort of, when I was speaking to Ash, I was just like, why don't you just join a startup or a small business and embed yourself in it, learn as much as you can, make yourself indispensable. And then, you know, like you'll sort of understand like what's needed to get things going. So like some people just literally might not have the skill set yet to get there. How can I get those skills as well? Cause there's plenty of paths to, starting your own business. I
guess. That's such a good point. Cause, we had an interview with Jamin Fraser. He's an expert on insecurities and insecurity project. And, he talks about this thing called the spiral dynamic. And basically what it is, it's this concept that imagine like a spiral and the first step is like going to school, getting base level education. And there's multiple different steps to, I guess, becoming successful, whatever that success looks like to you. And he gave us this advice because often, especially with like 18-year-olds, like 19-year-olds, they just want to like drop out of school, drop out of uni, go straight into a startup. But his advice was to oppose that is exactly what you've just said. Sometimes it is best to get those base level skills, especially if you want it to succeed in the long run, because I guess you now understand how to talk with investors. You now understand how to have those hard conversations even with your, whether that's founders and things like that. Whereas if you come in just out of 18, you have a $2 million investment from some random investor, you're going to fuck up a lot and there's more on the line. So sometimes it is best to maybe take it a bit slower. I do like that advice.
And we were talking before when we were setting up all the equipment, Luke, you actually started at PwC as a consultant. So like both of you really have you studied really similar degrees than what we're doing currently. And you actually did a year there. So like how was that? Especially your path was pretty much set for you. You could look down the line, look at the partners, look at the directors and say like, if I stay here, do a good job, I'm going to get promoted. Yeah. I'm going to climb the corporate ladder. Like taking that leap.
Yeah, it's probably the thing I didn't like the most about it is you kind of see your future ahead of you if you did the time and put in the work. There's some incredibly successful and smart people at those kind of companies. And in hindsight, I did actually learn a lot of skills from there, which I guess backs up your point of like maybe go do something else and develop some skills. But yeah, for me, and this is maybe just, well, this will again be different for each person. I love trying to remember that we're going to be dead. And you're going to be dead before you know it, in a way. And to me, that really motivates me to want to live an adventurous life and take a bit more risks, in a way. And I just didn't like going, okay, well, maybe in 20 years I'll be there and I'll be wealthy, but I might be time poorer or might have sacrificed my health. I'm still, if anything, I'd probably work harder outside of PwC, and I spend a lot of time looking at the computer. But, yeah, I guess just you got nothing to lose in a way. I mean, your experience of life is what matters, but you're not taking your house with you or whatever, your car and all that stuff. So if there's something you just excited to do, then you should just take the risk, I think.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that that's actually Ryan Holiday, he's like talks about stoicism and memento mori, I think, is like the stoic thing for one day I'll die or something like that. Yeah. And I think that's a lot of, you just touched on it just there. Like, it's a good reminder. It's I got to live it up. I got to try some different things, seek the discomfort.
It really puts into perspective what's important.
100%.
I think Jesse Itzer as well, he's like another big entrepreneur in America. He used to like write down how many days. He's got this massive calendar, like a lifetime calendar. It's a year, isn't it?
Yeah, a year.
But then he also...
On a poster.
Yeah, on the poster. Build your life resume.
I was like, I Googled this. I was like, I want to buy this. Anyway, I didn't.
And then he also has like, he looks at his parents like really... It's quite, people would view it as like pessimistic, but it's realistic. His parents are like 70, 80 years old. And he said, going off an average lifetime, like lifespan, they probably have enough, like 10, 5 years being healthy, another 5 years maybe in care. And then he calculates how many times, well, how much do I actually see them? Twice a year. Yeah. I actually need to make the most of these times. So it's like really stepping it out and saying, yeah, life is short and you need to take the make the most of it.
And the crazy thing of that poster, it's 90 years and you might die in a car accident.
Yeah. Like, that's like almost the best case,
it
right?
It is the best case, really. He's pretty lucky to live to 90.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Definitely puts things in perspective. Yeah.
So, we had a little tour before of the factory and it's really cool. It's unreal how much like money you guys have invested.
Like for those of you listening, it's kind of like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah. Except meat instead of chocolate.
Even better.
Shirtless men rip rigs.
There's people doing like chin-ups in the... I'm literally looking at a boulder. Like,
I didn't even notice that.
That's from Castorian Sands.
Yeah. Oh, God.
That was from this morning. Yeah. You know, there's rings and a door that you guys are all about outdoors, health, and fitness. So we walked in, did a tour, and it was unreal seeing like the facility that you guys have. And, you know, you have a massive cool room, all these machines, all these really hard assets that are worth so much. Being in the type of business, you need these kind of assets. How did you guys actually fund this business?
Well, this is a hard one. And we're very capital intensive business, being manufacturers. You want to start off this one?
And maybe even if you wanted to start on like, where you how it looked like at the start,
yeah, cool,
to where you came.
Yeah, well, I guess initially we just pulled our money together, so I think we all probably roughly put it about 10k into the business, so that was enough for us to get going in terms of getting the inventory we needed, rent the space.
Rented a room smaller than this room. That was like, it was just a little tiny kitchen, really.
All the machinery and stuff like that. We sort of obviously couldn't get every machine that we wanted, so we ended up being the machines for a good, like...
Yeah, we were the steak cutting machines.
Wait, they're good-looking machines though, right?
We've all got tennis elbow now.
We had some times where we had to go to the ER.
We all got our fingers, but Tom almost didn't.
Oh, for real?
Long story to that, but yeah.
You survived.
Yeah, I'm all right.
A bit of a trip to the hospital.
Yeah, but there did come a point where we're sort of just at capacity. We're probably in the factory or the kitchen 3 days a week ourselves, so we had maybe 2 days to catch up on the admin side and then hopefully grow the business a little bit. And we were sort of pretty stuck, really. We couldn't we couldn't produce anymore, and we had no capital to sort of make it an efficient process where we could actually hire people, because that would just blow out our costs of production too much. So
to me this is the hardest part of the business, where we'd shown that we'd validated the idea, but we just couldn't grow, like, because we're stuck in a factory producing biltong, couldn't produce more, we couldn't step out of the production to grow the business as well. So we're kind of just stuck in the situation. And we knew we had to make the investment into like a bigger factory or capital to get to the next step, but we couldn't even get credit cards at the time. Like credit cards, like the easiest loan to get, and we couldn't get credit cards, and there's no ways the bank would loan us money. All in our early 20s with zero assets to our name. And
we explored the idea of contract manufacturing as well. We just sort of pay for a manufacturer to make our product ourselves, but we were probably too much control freak. We cared a lot about the product and the not quality, changing it. So that we explored that a bit, and that just went out the window. We had to move on. We realized we just had to raise capital from family, friends, angel investors, and sort of that took a while. But
it took like maybe 2 years or so.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had actually my two older brothers who had a startup at the time, and they kind of inspired us, I guess, that we could go raise money. Luckily, we were able to get connected with more and more people outside of our network, because they do say like it's friends, family, and fools are the first people to invest in a startup. But as we kind of validated the idea and showed that, we were this tiny business, but we believed it could be much bigger, because we were mainly just in Canberra at that time and were able to just raise capital. That was definitely a huge achievement for us at the time. Just even believe that you could do that. How we've afforded those machines down there.
How was the process like pitching your idea to investors? Was there a hit rate? So we interviewed Michael Batko, who's the CEO of Startmate. It's like a startup accelerator in Melbourne. It's one of the biggest in Australia. Talk us through like the importance of having, venture capitalist firms and angel investors, they love more than one founder, because obviously you guys have more in the game. There's like more responsibility distributed among all of you guys, but also it comes down to like passion about the product, and you guys are obviously very passionate about it. So how was it actually pitching the idea?
Yeah, I guess it varied a lot with the different people we're pitching to. I actually did a lot better when I imagined it wasn't a pitch, it wasn't a presentation, it was just a conversation with someone. And of course, like if you pitching to a VC firm or something, it will be more of a PowerPoint presentation. But for the most part, it was mainly just a conversation with people. And that made me way less stressed about it. And we did have a business plan that we kind of developed. And you actually told me you used your economics degree finally, your finance degree. Did some discounted cash flows. And
nice.
financial modeling.
That's right.
Yeah. It was a really fun process. I guess we really had to build a vision for the company as well, and really how are we going to grow, and what needs to be done to get to those points and whatnot. But in terms of the actual pitching process, I guess there is an element of faking it till you make it a little bit, and we definitely had our roles in the pitch. Like Luke was sort of, he is the people person, and I was sort of the human calculator sort of dude. I had the same joke about me doing his statistics assignments probably 100 times. But
you laughed each time, though.
One thing that I remember quite well, I think we were pitching to some sort of VC in Sydney, and Luke, we were just probably like 5 minutes out from the interview, and Luke just said to me, just remember that these guys, they all sit down on the toilet every day and they squeeze the shit out. And I really like it's I do reflect on that again. Like you strip away all their sort of credentials, reputation, assets, and stuff like that. They're just people that are bumbling away, working out life, works in progress. So it makes things less daunting when you just have a few like little hacks like that for your own mind. It sort of just gets you going, and the anxiety goes away.
I guess actually at this point where business was an experiment, we didn't really have much expectation for it. This is, I guess, where we really started believing it could be something way bigger when we developed the business plan. So we started the business without a business plan. Like 2-3 years later, that's when we made our business plan. And
what did that kind of look like? Did you set out expectations and how you're actually going to like implement and put this across Australia?
Yeah.
Did you have any goals? Have you achieved any of those goals that you first wrote in that business plan?
I think we've pretty much achieved those goals, except it's taken a lot longer than we forecasted.
And costed more.
So actually, probably true of like anything, even like what I expect to get done today.
Yeah.
Probably going to get a fraction of what I wanted to get done, and that was definitely true of just the business plan, because it's just hard to forecast the future, really.
Yeah, I think, like, you do get a bit, like, your delusions keep you sane in a way, or they keep you, like, motivated. Like,
yeah.
We kind of have a bit of a running joke with one of our mentors and investors who, yeah, I think if we were to go off our business plan from, yeah, 5 or 6 years ago, we should be doing about $40 million in revenue right now, and we're not doing a fraction of that. So, like, pie in the sky type stuff does keep you sort of, yeah, just ticking along and
yeah.
keep grinding.
I know that, like, flashback to year 11 and 12, business class, like, business plan's the first thing you got to do. But the more that I've listened to podcasts and we've talked to, like, founders, is that it's pretty pointless in the start. You genuinely, like, the business will change so much.
That's right,
yeah. Like, it, and as you've said, like, things change, things take longer or faster. You didn't know you're probably going to raise capital and all these things. Yeah, so it's interesting.
I guess, like, for an e-commerce business, like, you guys are a bit different with when you actually know what the product is. But, like, for e-commerce and, like, online businesses, you hear a lot from the startups that they can't be entrenched and love their product as much, because that might change over time. Like, the product they first envisioned to sell and go big, they might have had to change it or swap it around depending on, you know, how
what
many
the
people,
customer wants.
What the customer wants and, yeah, how much traction it got.
That's so true. Yeah. It's 12:30. You guys have a couple more minutes?
Oh, yeah, man. There's no hurry.
We'll just bill you guys afterwards.
In squats?
Yeah, okay. With that boulder over there.
So, I guess for a lot of people that we know, they're stuck inside an office, 9-to-5 job. Me and Reese reflected, our feet don't really touch the solid ground very often. I'm going to be honest. Like, we're stuck in it. And I think that's, like, a massive thing for a lot of people. And not many people are getting out and about in nature. And Jesse Itzler talks about build your life resume, and that's going on camping trips, getting outside, connecting with nature. What impacts do you think this societal change of, I guess, being stuck inside is having on mental health and, I guess, overall well-being?
Yeah, biltong. I like this question. I guess our company embraces this. You know, we did a workout this morning. We're all there. I guess my views on it are shaped around my beliefs around evolution. Like, we are upright, intelligent apes, and we've evolved for certain environments. Like, exercise sucks, but it makes you feel good, and that's not by a mistake. And so I think if you can live, you know, modern life, I'm going to stare at a computer screen for the next couple of hours. But if you can kind of incorporate those movements or exercises, or, you know, just a walk in nature, I think it's better for your mind and your body, because we have evolved for it.
Right? Yeah.
That's my roundabout answer of saying.
I just find nature and sort of, sweating each day, like, just good for my mental health, I guess. It's kind of, I know if I stray from those sort of habits, I'm losing a bit of balance in my life. And I also just think it, it's a better way to connect with people a lot of the time as well, versus sort of various technologies and stuff like that.
I'm thinking through, like, we're animals, and if you have a dog, or if you take a dog and you never walk it, it's going to be an unhappy dog. And it's good to remember that we're just animals on some level. We're just animals as well.
And let me paint the picture of this morning. Right, so 6:30, Luke and I were talking over email. We were really keen to get amongst this Granimals. We love the name as well. Ben and I were talking about it.
From David Goggins.
Perfect name.
It's awesome. He said we sparked our interest. We said, well, we're keen to come down. You know, it seems like good crew that you guys got along, like you're lifting boulders and doing weights with all that. So, we rocked down there 6:30 in the morning. It was raining all last night. I actually messaged Basso this morning, and I was like, Ben asked me, I was like, is it going to be on? Like, it's raining. And I was like, they're going to do this shit, like, rain, hail, or shine.
I told you don't tell them that, man.
They're going to be there. And Basso's like,
rains are the special session.
Basso's like, definitely on, man. Like, we do it all the time. It's never not on. So, we get down there, take our shoes off, walk down there with thongs.
Let me just say, I had shoes on, and I was like, fuck, I didn't even bring thongs. So, I took down, I'm like, oh, damn, it feels so unnatural to even, like, just walk down. So weird. Walk down there with no shoes on. I don't know.
It's funny that feels unnatural.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Or work. Anyway, go on.
Get in there. you know, sand in our toes, at the Cotter, look straight ahead, basically just like a valley, water right in front of us.
Nice river.
Like, it was amazing. And first thing, hopped in the water, freezing cold, but like that, you don't even need a coffee in the morning if you're doing that.
You don't.
And we did a workout with the boulders, had a really good like group of guys and girls there, and it was awesome. We really enjoyed it, and a swim after. And you guys do that every Friday morning. Like, that just goes to show what you guys are all about.
Yeah, and just sort of to touch on, I guess you probably get that experience whenever you look at anything that's quite vast, like which nature is. So, like, if you look out into the ocean or you look up at the skies, the stars and whatnot, it does make you feel like less, I don't know, you're not as much in your head. You're not thinking about me, and you're less significant than you think. Like, the waves are just going to keep coming in, like, for millennia after you're gone, and they're always rolling in that way as well. So I think that's another resetting thing about, like, being in nature. It's just you feel small.
Yeah, on that, we've been talking a lot with our guests about being present, because it's super easy to be distracted all the time and almost get lost in your thoughts, especially for you guys. Like, you guys are thinking about so many different things, about the business, like stresses, family, like relationships, all these different things. And it's difficult to be in the present sometimes. We interviewed Ethan Fleming. He's done multiple challenges. He pulled a Jeep 100 Ks nonstop. It took him 48 hours, had like 20 minutes sleep. Insane. But he talks about, like, when he does these challenges, he's present the entire time. So he's like fully involved, and he's like, yeah, his mind is just completely present. And that's something that we've noticed. It's when you're in nature, you kind of forced to be present. Like, you can look around at the trees, like, you hear the birds, like these different things. You're not kind of always in your mind. Whereas what I notice when I go long stints where I haven't done that, just overthinking all the time, like straight, I let my thoughts run wild instead of just, I don't know, I'm right in front of me, I'm brushing my teeth. Like, I just want to feel the bristles on my teeth. But instead, I'm like thinking about like four different things. It's funny.
Yes, yeah. I think that's all just a symptom, and I'm exactly the same, or just modern life.
Yeah.
I think it's so unnatural. So if you can tap into that nature and that slower way of being, you wake up, I got to do all these things today. You would have woken up and been like, I need to go hunt my food. That's it.
That's it.
Like,
yeah.
So, it's so true, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely quite unnatural the way we live.
Also, sort of, when you go camping, like, you really do have less options at your disposal, and there's something quite freeing about that. Like, you pretty much, you get up, like, you cook your brekkie, you might go for a swim, and like you dry off, and then you're back, like, you can start building a fire, and then pretty much it's dinner time. And like, you can't, if you don't have like reception or whatnot, you can't just look up whatever comes to your mind in terms of like the latest thing that you've taken an interest in. You just have to sit with like the boredom or your own mind. And I think that's another beautiful thing about just getting away from modern life, I guess.
I love that. That's awesome. Having a walk around through the factory and your facilities now, seeing all the automated machines, you guys have grown substantially since we started out just having one room, doing all the man labor yourself. What have you guys got envisioned for Barbell Foods to look like in 5 to 10 years' time?
I guess...
Just pull out the business plan.
Yeah, yeah. 40 million, was it?
It's pretty funny. Yeah, we don't really have like...
No, I guess we know there's a lot more capacity for us to grow. We now thankfully have that production capacity downstairs. We might need to increase our production space a bit. But it's really now just... getting more new customers, and that will involve getting new accounts and connecting with people, whether that's online or through marketing, and really just trying to keep enjoying the journey myself. Like, I could do this for 50 years if I'm enjoying it, but if I'm really hating it, I'll just quit. So I just want to keep growing the business, keep having fun, work on more interesting problems. So when we started, I might have a whole day of cutting steaks, like literally just cutting steaks 16 hours or something. And you just have to put in those hard yards, but that's boring. And, you know, this is fun. This is fun.
Yeah.
We can do more of this kind of stuff as we grow. Like yesterday, we filmed heaps of skits, and just want to keep enjoying the journey, really. And wherever we end up, we end up.
I think in terms of what the brand will hopefully stand for as well, I think we'll always sort of be as transparent as we can about, like, our supply chain, and really try to push for
I guess, better meat production in general. That's something that I think we'll always stick to our guns for. And just sort of the whole notion of like keeping it real, like not taking like life too seriously, but also, taking it seriously at times as well. And just really embracing that sort of playful spirit that's really within all of us. Mm. I think those are the things that I hope the brand stands for. And then I guess like in terms of like the next 5 years for probably some of the founders of the business is just sort of becoming good leaders to the point where I guess if we're sitting around a table in 5 years' time, we're probably surrounded with people that have made us redundant in a way, that probably have a better skill set than us in every way, shape or form. And that would be pretty, like, I think we've succeeded as sort of leaders or founders of the business if we get to that point.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, that's a really great song.
You guys have something special and we're really excited to see what you guys do in the future. And I love that whole idea about keeping it real. It's different to all, like, I look in the aisle at Woolies and it's like, look at all the other ones. Even the branding is so much different. It's better, I'm going to be honest. And I think that's such a point of difference for you guys. And I love that you guys have a broader mission, and that's about, sustainability and all those other things you have on the side, which I think is really important to build a successful brand and, like, platform and, I guess, economies of scale kind of build off that as well. And thank you guys so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, and taking the time out and inviting us here to have a look at your facility as well. We enjoyed this morning.
And fucking us up this morning.
We loved it.
We'll see you next Friday.
We'll be there.
It was a lot of fun, guys.
Yeah. Before we hand you off, do you want to give a shout out to where our audience can, I guess, find out a little bit more about you, everything you guys have going on at Barbell?
Yeah, probably just our website's the easiest. If you type in Barbell Foods, we'll come up.
Yeah, well, you can check out our antics on Instagram and stuff like that as well. Yeah. So,
100%.
We'll buy some biltong. This stuff's good.
Yeah. This shit is good.
Woolworths Health Food Aisle, you can find us in many places now. So, check it out.
100%. And all of those links will be in the show notes below. Thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, pleasure, guys.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you want to stay up to date with what's new, remember to press follow on your chosen podcast platform.
You can find us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Young Opportunist. Once again, thanks for listening.
Catch you next time.